Morning, everyone. Thank you, Jordan. I don't know if public speaking is one of the gifts God has blessed me with, so bear with me. The psalm I'm speaking on today is Psalm 101. When I got the phone call asking if I wanted to speak on a psalm, all I could think of was I don't have a favourite and how could I possibly choose? I thought it would be funny to choose Psalm 119 as a joke, but when I read it again, I realised it's actually really awesome. But I decided to go down the path of 101. I decided to read the Psalms backwards for something different, decided to keep reading them until I chose, but after I read 101, I couldn't go much further, and then a few days later at a Bible study I was at, it came up again, and so I was like, here we go, Psalm 101. So I'm reading from NLT. It says, I will sing of your love and justice, Lord, I will praise you with songs. I will be careful to live a blameless life. When will you come and help me? I will live a life of integrity in my own home. I will refuse to look at anything vile and vulgar. I hate all who deal crookedly. I will have nothing to do with them. I will reject perverse ideas and stay away from every evil. I will not tolerate people who slander their neighbours. I will not endure conceit and pride. I will search for faithful people to be my companions. Only those who are above reproach will be allowed to serve me. I will not allow deceivers to serve in my house, and liars will not stay in my presence. My daily task will be to ferret out the wicked and free the city of the Lord from their grip. That's a psalm of David. I believe it's just after he became king. I was really stopped in my track by how blunt this psalm is, how straight to the point and clear it is. Like, what an example of how we should strive to live our lives. I feel like we can all relate to this psalm in one way or another, and it truly is amazing that David wrote this so long ago. Like, these are not new struggles that we all have, but something God's people have been struggling with since the beginning, since the garden. Lying isn't something that comes naturally to me, thankfully. I have known some people who we almost couldn't trust anything that they said because so much of what they spoke was lies. And it's always hard to be around people who lie. I'm a naturally very trusting person, and that's been quite a hard lesson for me to learn, is that not everybody speaks truth. And so we have to be so careful of that and so discerning. And we can use, like, God will help us with that if we ask him to. Anyway, I remember I told a big lie to a friend in high school, and it still haunts me to this day. And so I really resonated with this chapter because I really hate lies. I hate just mistruths and deception, and I think they're so harmful and they serve no purpose. Verses 6 to 8 spoke to me the most here, where it says, I will search for faithful people to be my companions. Only those above reproach will be allowed to serve me. I will not allow deceivers to serve in my house, and liars will not stay in my presence. My daily task will be to ferret out the wicked and free the city of the Lord from their grip. Taylor and I Since returning to Hope 7 or 8 years ago, Taylor and I have been welcomed and surrounded by a beautiful community of respectful and godly people, and it has made a huge difference to our lives. Seeking out people who share the same values as us has been very important to us, particularly since having kids. We have quite a tight circle of people who are allowed alone with them, and we are very particular with what school we've been sending them to, and rereading these verses has really solidified those decisions. The NLT translation says that only those above reproach will serve me. NIV says only those who walk blameless will minister to me. I think that the two versions use different language. I like that the two versions use different languages, and it has helped me with the interpretation of it. Taylor and I talked about what the word serve could mean here in this chapter, and after reading NIV, we realised it was about letting people influence you. David says that he'll only let those above reproach minister to him. We as Christians should not allow deceivers to influence us or liars in our presence, or the presence of the temple that God gave us, more than our godly family. We are, however, called by Jesus to guide the lost, including the liars and deceivers, to him. So there's a bit of a balance there where we can't just completely ignore them, because we are called to help them. Back in verse 3, David talks about how he refuses to look at anything vile and vulgar. There have been times in my life where I've watched the wrong movies or shows or scrolled too many hours on my phone trying to fill my cup, ultimately filling it with the wrong content. What spills out for me then? Anxiety, doubt, disrespect, poor language. How am I able to guide others to Jesus if I myself am doing the wrong things in my home? Charles Spurgeon says, "Reader, how fares it with your family? Do you sing in the choir and sin in the chamber? Are you a saint abroad but a devil at home? For shame. What we are at home is what we are indeed." When I focus on my home and what I do when no one is watching, although he always sees, and I read his word, I listen to sermons and I pray and interact with fellow Christians, I notice a huge difference in what I can give to others. I'll finish with this. Refuse to look at anything vulgar. Do not surround yourself or let yourself be influenced by deceivers and liars. And pray for the deceivers and liars around you and try to guide them to Jesus. Thank you.
The psalm I'm looking at is Psalm 91. And when I work out how to use my phone, which my five children tell me I don't know how to use, but I do. So I'm looking at Psalm 91, and I'm reading for the NIV version, and it says, "Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 to your right hand, but it will not come near you. You will only observe with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. If you say, 'The Lord is my refuge,' and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you. No disaster will come near your tent, for He will command His angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the cobra, and you will trample the great lion and the serpent." And this is what God says, "Because He loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call on me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble and I will deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation." On reflecting on that psalm, I think we've all said at some point or other, "I've had one of those days." And we've got to the end of the day and it's like, "Yep, I've had one of those days." Sometimes for some of us it's been, "I've had one of those weeks." For me at one time, I had one of those years. I knew in my heart that I was saved, and I knew that I was redeemed, but I went through a stage of thinking, how could God possibly love me? How could God really be interested in me? At this time, there was about 3.5 billion people on the planet. I'm thinking, there's little me in Blackmans Bay. And I would mention this to people and they would say, "Oh, you're in the desert. You're having a desert experience." And I would say, "No, I live in Blackmans Bay. What does it mean? I live with my brother and my parents." And people would say, "Oh, God's got you in the desert." And I had no idea what that meant. And I worked in a Christian bookshop at the time, and I still had no idea what that meant. And I just felt disconnected from God. I felt I was doing church, going to Bible study, going to my cell group, telling people that I'd been saved at the Bill Newman Crusade. Yay, Andrew. But I didn't feel connected to God. And I thought, what's going on? And so I would cry out to him and say, God, people are saying I'm in a desert and I don't know what that means. And this went on for about 6 months. And then one February evening, it was actually, yes, the start of a new year. It was a January evening. It was quite late and very hot. And it was about 9 o'clock and I decided to go for a walk along the beach. And I'm ankle deep in water because I don't like the ocean, so ankles is about as far as I got. And I'm walking on the beach and for the first time in months I heard the little voice of, read Psalm 91. So I go home when the house is nice and quiet, because I was the only Christian in my house at the time. There was me, so I felt a little bit isolated and cut off. So I got out my Bible and I read Psalm 91 and I thought, yep, okay, Psalm 91, that was great. I was like, read Psalm 91, so I read it again. And I read it about 4 times. After the 4th time, I felt God almost come into the room. And at the end of Psalm 91, it says, I will restore him. I will rescue him. I will protect him. I will answer him. And I will be with him trouble. And I will deliver him with honour. That's a personal psalm because God's talking to us personally, no matter where we are in life, because we're all on a faith journey. I'm on a faith journey here and someone might be on a faith journey there, but God's at both places. God's at all places. And so I continued to read and study Psalm 91 and it reminded me of God's 13 attributes. That he is a personal God and he loves me dearly. Even though I couldn't comprehend it, even though I couldn't understand it, God loved me dearly. That he's all powerful, that I couldn't possibly have had a problem that God couldn't manage, handle, solve, fix, or take me through. That God was present everywhere. And when I first became a Christian, I did not grow up in a Christian household, so I would tell God I was going to the shop in case he lost me. And I said, I'm back. When I look back, I think, I have grown so much. So God is everywhere. God is everything. So not only does he own the cattle on the hills, he owns the hills. There's nothing that I have gone without as a Christian. He's met every need. God is sovereign. And his love reminds me that, yes, he is the King of Kings. He's the governor of the universe. He is sovereign. And yes, I am but made of dust. And yet he loves me enough to send his son to the cross so that I might be redeemed. Yet he's still sovereign. God is holy. And that reminds us to live a holy life, to emulate and to copy the example set by Jesus, that we're to live a holy life. God is absolute truth. Well, we've heard many talk about truth, that we're to walk in the truth because Jesus says, I am the way, the life and the truth. God is righteous. He's just and he is love. He's merciful and he's faithful. And the one I like the most is God does not change. He cannot change. And I got all of that out of Psalm 91. And I was able to share that psalm at my father's Thanksgiving service because about 2 years after I became a Christian, my parents became Christians. And That psalm means a lot to me because it reminds me that God is in the business of restoration. And I don't know what this year's going to hold for all of us, but God's already there. I don't know what tomorrow's going to, except I go back to work. God is already there. And there's nothing, no matter what we go through this year, God is there. He's holding us in the palm of his hand. He is sovereign, he is king, and he is Lord. And we can trust him because, most of all, he is faithful and he does love us. So thank you.